afternoon. I want to say, first of all, that I'd ask council, they know what the agenda is. Has anyone any conflict of interest they wish to declare at this time? Seeing no hand, we'll have that entered into the minutes as such, and normal procedure will apply. If, of course, during the exercise of this meeting, you find yourself in conflict. We have today with us, of course, Jamie Lanou and Anissa Rufadin from DeLatte. And Jamie and Anissa are here simply to answer any questions council may have as it relates to the financial services review. Jamie and Anissa will not answer questions from the public nor the media. And I would ask that when you are asking questions to Jamie and Anissa, that council that have asked that you refer to the section of the report which you are questioning. And finally, we also have with us this afternoon our solicitor, Ed Posley, who I understand would like to provide some comments to council as it relates to this particular process. And having said that, these comments will be on a solicitor-client basis. And having said that, I would require a motion for this body to go in camera.
That would be just simply to deal with his comments,
exactly.
And then we'd be back in public?
That's very clear.
I'll move to hear the solicitor's opinion.
It's moved. Is there a supporter? Councillor Pilon, any discussions? Councillor Puget.
Thank you, Mayor Hirsch. Through you to our solicitor, for the benefit of the audience, could you please tell us how long this will take so that they will be prepared?
My remarks will be less than 5 minutes.
Okay.
I can't anticipate whether council has any questions of me, but my remarks will be less than 5 minutes.
Thank you.
All in favor? Motion is carried. No. John, you can stay.
To the mayor, do you want me to do that every time?
No, that's good. No. Go ahead, Jamie.
In this instance, and I think in some of the other instances, we would definitely recommend starting with a quarterly reporting. Just recognizing the amount of effort that's going to need to go into getting this level of reporting prepared and ready for council, and then I think reassessing that on a regular basis to see if we need something a little bit more frequent would be something I encourage management and council to discuss as they go forward.
Sure.
And then just one
You can continue to your next question.
Well, sure. I'll just ask three for now and then allow my colleagues the opportunity to do so
well,
as well.
Well, if you want, we'll go around the table if everybody's got them. Let's just do it.
Perfect. Regarding the additional training recommended for council, and it talks about, so council will know the questions that they should be asking. In the past, and without getting into specifics, council has asked certain questions, whether it be how a project was funded or how a vehicle was to be funded, and we've come to find out that the answers that were presented were either incomplete or inaccurate or certainly not in keeping with what we would have expected based upon those questions. So I guess all of us kind of struggle with what questions do you see that should have been asked or could have been asked, or what would an overview of that training look like to help council out?
Sure. Without specific instances of maybe where those situations arise, I think the training that would have been helpful and will be helpful going forward is really just some basic 101 on municipal finance, understanding financial statements and financial accounting for municipalities. The terminology around things like reserves in terms of cash, non-cash, equity reserves, those sorts of items. I think with a better understanding, and certainly if you have a finance and audit committee with maybe more financial skill sets around the table, should have the ability to ask that second and third question to quickly understand whether or not management is addressing the original question or if there's a material gap there that needs to be addressed through some other means.
Okay. Okay, thank you. That's all I have for now.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, through you every time. I've got a number of questions, but in fact, I had 5 pages versus 5 questions, but some of the questions have been answered. But first, I want to personally thank Deloitte and the current financial team members for their very hard work. And I found the report useful and encouraging in providing direction to move Amherstburg from the past practice methods of accounting to a model of good financial management and governance. I appreciate and the acknowledgement that a significant effort by the new management team to correct the past practices, and further, that additional professional accounting resources need to be put in place. So council has a critical decision to make to ensure we do not stop here, rather complete the task to ensure the department has adequate resources to do so. So there were a number of questions, and I think you got all 5 pages. Hopefully they aren't too simplistic, but I really want to be clear on every question just so that it was appropriate. Under the root cause analysis, the issue was development charges did not materialize, creating a strain on the cash flow, and 2009 overestimated revenues expected created a shortfall. So my question there were the projects of new build not occurring, and was it just, or was that just a projection that was happening when you saw that?
Yeah, so on that issue specifically, what happens, the new developments didn't take place at the rate that they were expected to from the development charges study, so the revenue was not there to help support the capital projects that did continue to go ahead. So we really had a situation where we were spending money on the expense side, but we didn't have the amount of revenue coming in on the other side.
So we spent before we had it.
In essence.
And it makes sense to not base those projections on that. But so what strategy is optimal? Basically, don't spend until you have it? Is that the strategy?
I think the strategy is to have some contingencies built into your long-term financial plan and to have some sensitivity analysis built into that long-term financial plan. I think in hindsight, if we had used more of a range of expectation on the development charges and maybe built our capital plan towards the bottom end of that range as opposed to the high end of that range, we might have found some contingencies that would have been helpful in avoiding some of the deficit that we ended up with.
Thank you. Then the issue of finance maintained control that was changed in 2014 budget process. And I think that may partially have been answered. What kind of education do managers need to be solidly competent in their budgetary decision making? And what kind of expenses need to be expected? Workshops, series, or should it be like that they do something annually? Do they do a 3-day workshop someplace special, or that kind of question?
Sure, I think I'll answer that in a few different parts. I think the folks in the finance department that are here now have the financial designations and background to be able to do what they need to do for finance, so it's really the operational managers that we're talking about. I would suggest a combination of continuing education type courses that are put on by the OMA or other municipal associations on municipal finance. And then I also think they're going to get a lot of consultative learning through the finance team as they move forward through the new budgeting process, and also through the new, monthly and quarterly variance reporting analysis that they're going to be doing. They'll get a chance to learn a lot more from the finance team in terms of how to look at those variances, interpret what the forecast should look like, and we'll definitely see the maturing of the finance skill sets within the operations as well through that process.
Thank you. And again, the issue of poor record keeping. Does the Vadmeyer software syndicate program provide adequate recording, record keeping, and program capacity if all the appropriate people are thoroughly trained? And is this only for finance department, or can managers and other departments take advantage of using that program for their own budgeting?
Sure. So the first part of that I'll answer is that VADM is used by a number of municipalities the size of Amherstburg, so it does have the functionality that's required to do the record keeping for a municipality. There's probably ways it can be used better in which management's going to discuss with VADM and also look to make sure that they've got enough skill sets in-house to be able to maintain it and make it work better for them. Where it does fall down a little bit is the reporting capabilities of the tool. So a lot of operational managers have to take extracts into Excel and then work with the data in order to do the analysis that they want to do. One of the initiatives that management's going to look at as a result of this report is going to be looking at a report writing tool that they can put on top of Adam to ease that reporting process and make sure that everyone's using consistent reporting out of the system.
Thank you. Thank you. And then issue page 3, lack of transparency to council. Will the recommendations for the monthly, quarterly, and annual recommendations, will they be adequate to gain back trust of council and confidence of the general public?
Great question. Obviously, there's a lack of trust there today. I think I would ask the community to give the new finance team some time to find their feet here and actually work through the recommendations of the report. I've gained confidence in this team from the time that we spent with them, and I do feel that if they can live up to the monthly and quarterly reporting and gaining the level of transparency that they want to achieve with council and with the public, I'm really hopeful that a year from now we can look back at this and say we've gotten past the hurdle.
Okay. Then delayed in auditing efficient grant applications issue that you had. Should there be a designated grant proposal writers, like such as in the Economic Development Office, and should external assistants speak like a consultant concerning raising and overseeing or contracting out RFPs? How should we go about the grant application? Because there's lots, if we know, and if we know what we're doing, it's great, but if we don't know what we're doing, it takes a lot of staff time that otherwise could be spent in other things.
Yeah, so I'm going to address this question in two parts, because I think the first part of your question was really in the delay of the auditing of the financial statements that led to the grant funding not coming in on a timely basis. That was more of an issue of finance not having those statements prepared, and not our ability to propose on certain grants and get a certain amount of grant funding. So from that perspective, I think with the financial controls that we're recommending, we should not find the town should not find itself in that situation again in terms of not getting the dollars on a timely basis for the grants that they have been awarded. On the topic of whether or not designated people should be put in place to chase the grants, so to speak, I think more resource will always help in terms of making sure that we've identified all the granting possibilities that are out there and that we're putting forward solid proposals to get those grants. I think it's always a cost-benefit analysis that you need to do in terms of if we put more money into it, are we really going to get more grant dollars, or are we just going to continue to get our share of grant dollars? So I'm sure staff, management would always take more resource to help them in those grants, but I would encourage management to look at the cost-benefit ratio of going down that path.
Okay. The issue of debt repayment. We deemed to keep shares in Essex Power rather than sell off the $12 million, so we take responsibility for that. What do you propose as a strategy to increase revenue generation, surplus lands, debentures, and development charges?
Yeah, and then just to be clear, we weren't in any way critical of not selling those shares. I do think if you were to look at surplus lands, as you mentioned in your question, that would be one option. And then obviously you need to look to your tax base and your water base in terms of the levies to see where there might be opportunity to increase those revenues. I do think the 10-year financial plan that management will be working on will bring some scenarios forward of what our capital project world could look like if we were 0% on taxes for the next 10 years versus putting in a nominal amount of increase every year to keep up with inflation.
Issue, this is 1.1, which I'm supposed to be doing. Useful to have acknowledged that the new budget structure for 2014 provides a better alignment of revenues and expenses for each operational area. So in regards to 3, reserves and reserve funds, can you have reserves for things like heritage?
Yeah, so it's really up to the town to determine what they want to have reserves on. So you could definitely have a heritage reserve fund if that's what you wanted to do. I would look to make sure that we put the right parameters around that reserve in terms of whether it's cash or non-cash and how we're going to manage that reserve. And again, one of the recommendations was having a policy and framework on how we leverage reserves here at the town, and I know that's something that management is working on right now.
2.21 issue, there was no evidence that the policy was being followed or aligned with council's expectations. The word debt has been confused with problems by critics. Describe the pros and cons of long-term debt, when it is best used, and when it is better to use operational funding.
I'm just looking for that question in the order. Did you skip down a few on your list?
Gee whiz. Let me just see if the pages stuck together. No, I think it was. I think it was. It was right after issue 1.1.
Yeah.
2.2.1. 2.2.1.
for some reason it's not in the list in front of me. Can I just ask you to repeat it for me again? Sorry.
The word debt has been confused with problems by critics. Describe the pros and cons of long-term debt, when it is best used, and when it is better to use operational funding.
Great. Yeah, I would agree that I think a lot has been made of the amount of the debt level here at the town. Debt is not necessarily a bad word. We all have it in our lives. I think it's best used where there's a significant investment that is necessary for the community, but for which we have not got adequate funding put aside in terms of a sinking reserve fund or any sort of other dollars set aside to address that particular need. But it also needs to be balanced out with our ability to carry that debt in terms of the principal and interest, and also an understanding of some of the other capital projects that may then have to be put to the side if we are taking on, you know, extra debt for a given project. So I would suggest, you know, any municipality is going to have a certain amount of debt. It's just a matter of balancing out what we're saving to do versus what we might suddenly need to do in terms of capital projects.
And supplementary to that, would you suggest, where would you suggest we are in that balance right now?
I think history has shown that we didn't have sinking funds set up. We weren't adequately putting money aside for some of these projects, and In the last few years, we've taken on, you know, more capital than we had the operating dollars to accommodate, and that's what's really led to a bit of an increase in the debt, and then also the bank indebtedness in terms of our ability to not carry that amount of debt on an annual basis. Now, that being said, I will point out that Amherstburg is still well within their thresholds of annual debt repayment charges. If you look at the ministry reporting that they need to do. So it's not that they're above that. They've still got some room to actually take on more debt if you needed to.
Thank you. And 2.23, do you have that one? Just investment in technology. What kinds of programs would be needed to be purchased to be able to move forward with advanced benchmarks and those kinds of things? Because I assume that one software program is the end all be all.
No, there's probably a couple of areas for looking at technology investment in the short term. One is around the reporting, which I mentioned earlier, around putting a reporting tool on top of Adam. The other one is in the capital assets area, because we're still doing a lot of our capital asset management here at the town in Excel. And obviously it's the capital assets that drive the whole capital project forecasting and future financial planning. That needs to be more systemized for that purpose alone. And then I would suggest that looking another 5 to 10 years out, we probably need to just sit back and take a look at VADM itself and whether or not it's sustainable beyond that time frame, or if we need to look at something a little more robust.
Getting close. Are these additional monitoring of processes and controls above and beyond the standard expectation of an external auditor? This is 3.2.1. And do we pass that in council before an auditor is hired, or prior to when we're about to do the audit itself? So you did ask for additional things that beyond this, I take it if that's beyond a standard audit that we have been doing externally.
Yeah, so I think that the comments in the report in that section and probably in a couple other sections are such that where there's an instance, whether it's reserve accounting or somewhere else, where council feels there's some risk around that area and maybe they'd like to have it looked at by an independent third party, you obviously have that ability to either extend the contract that you have with the external auditor to do what we would call extended audit procedures, or go out to market similar to the way you got to us through the ministry, but go out and look for a consultant to come in and review those particular areas for you. I think it can be done either as part of the procurement process for the financial audit, or it can be done on an annual basis with your auditor when you're doing the planning for that particular year in the financial statement audit. The audit committee, or in this case council, could actually put a request through to the auditor at that point in time to do some extended procedures and have them estimate what it would cost to do those procedures and then make a decision on whether you want to spend the extra money.
Just supplementary to that, though, you know, at some level, and maybe that's part of the education that we're looking forward to, is that we didn't know what we were supposed to ask for to have done above and beyond the standard audit, and that's something maybe comes in the education of the counselors.
Yeah, for sure. I think We always have to stand back and look at the risk environment of the organization from a financial perspective. And if we felt as a group that there's some financial risk around either reserve accounting, because we weren't getting the questions answered that we wanted to have answered, or maybe around procurement or other areas, then we need to, you know, use something like the Finance and Audit Committee to really challenge management on that. And where they're not getting a sufficient enough response, look to the external auditor or a third party to come in and take a look.
I have more questions, Mr. Mayor, but I think it's unfair. I'd like other people to have an opportunity to,
Peel?
To ask questions.
Well, thank you, Councilor D. I've been going to ask for a pass to go home. Just, and actually covered a few I had, but there's one that I'd like to, I guess, go in deeper is 1.4.2 is a development charge forecast we have. And I didn't, and I apologize, I didn't send any out. But you know, that's good to have to think on your feet once in a while.
I just may ask for a couple minutes on these ones, if that's okay. If you give me a real stumper.
No, that's a very, very easy one. It's just that we had our planner forecasted so much and it never materialized. Like, what can we do to correct that problem in the future? Because obviously, when you're doing planning and forecasting, there is the possibility of that happening.
Yeah, I think the suggestion that I'll reiterate, both to management, because we talked a bit about this earlier, and just Councillor Davies' question, is such that we need to build contingencies into our planning. So if a consultant comes forward and says we're going to have 10% growth, and there's some skeptics around the table that feel 5% is probably more realistic, there needs to be healthy debate on where in the 5 to 10% range do we actually want to build our plan around, because it's going to dictate a lot of other things in terms of how many projects we take on, whether or not we need to increase our tax rates, et cetera. So what we've encouraged management to do, and I'm sure council will see, is building in a little more sensitivity analysis to the long-range financial planning and having more contingency and what-if scenarios around if we don't achieve that growth in the development charges, what else is that going to put at jeopardy? Will it put tax freezes at jeopardy? Will it put other capital projects at jeopardy? Being able to be a bit more visual and understanding of what those consequences are going to be is going to be a lot more important within the long-term financial planning process.
So basically, what you're telling me is council has to, we have to, I guess, I don't know if the right word would be challenge our own administration at certain times on predictions, and you know, just so it's not, oh, here it is, like we should debate it more, I guess, and then so we get a better understanding.
Yeah, I think it's always healthy to ask what assumptions went into certain projections or forecasts, because there's ultimately many variables that go into creating a forecast or a projection, and I think getting management to explain those assumptions and why they've made them will give council a chance to help assess those assumptions, whether or not they feel they're realistic or if they're too ambitious.
Okay, that's good. 3.1.2, financial management. You suggest that council goes in for training for that. And again, that was touched on by Councilor Davis. I guess just how deep or how much are you suggesting? You know the old saying, you get too many cooks in a kitchen, you're going to stir it up. So can everybody on council be a financial manager? Is that what we're looking at?
No, and obviously we're going to be looking at a new council in the next couple of months, and you're looking at how you're going to address these recommendations. My advice and guidance would be to take a reflection of what your new council looks like, see where that expertise might reside in council. Where there's a gap, look to address it through training and or even using or leveraging folks that are in the community. The Finance and Audit Committee recommendation, as an example, would suggest that if we feel there's a gap around the council table for a certain area of expertise that's that essential to the operation of the organization, we can definitely look to the community to fill that gap as well. But I think in general, for the councillors that wouldn't be on a Finance and Planning Committee, there's still some general training through the ministry and through the different municipal associations that would be beneficial for them to take, just to better understand the basics of municipal finance and how to decompose a financial statement and understand the notes to financial statements.
Okay, yeah, I understand that. I guess basically what you're saying is on the new council, see who's there, see what their expertise is. If they come from that world, then we say we got a good person for that finance committee. I mean, that would be the obviously the one you have put on, if, you know, if he's got expertise in it.
He or she.
Or yeah. She, pardon me, I should know better by now. Okay, that's good. I had other questions, but again, it's going to go right back to personnel, and we're not.
Yeah, and I think just in building out a finance and audit committee, it's not to say that everyone on that committee needs to be a chartered accountant or, you know, have a full finance background. I think leverage the people that do have it on council, but then look to bring others into it that will learn that along the way and go on the training and become, you know, better understanding of it as well, I guess.
Councilor DePasquale?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just had you got a copy of my question.
Yes, sir.
Mine kind of basically had a lot of questions about the reserves.
No, it's not.
Is your mic on, Councilor DePasquale? Your mic on?
Sorry, on now. My first question, were dates identified and was municipal reserve and reserve funds were last reconciled when we completed the reconciliation?
Yeah, so our response there is that we looked at the annual financial statements and the annual reconciliations of reserves. We did not look and did not feel our scope was to look at all the detailed transactions in and out of reserves for those entire years.
Were there any, did you identify when the municipal reserve funds were used and the corresponding authorization to remove or use the reserve funds?
Yes, kind of the same answer, but I'll also point back a little bit to there is no current policy on what reserve transfers need to be approved by whom. So there's definitely a recommendation that clarity needs to be provided in the form of a reserve policy.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You addressed the basic question that I have. Was it found when the municipal reserves and funds were reallocated to pay for either the operations or the capital budgets contained in any approved municipal budget?
So again, I kind of have to point back to just what was in the report and the scope of review, but I will say that there was also an implied assumption by management that when this council approved the capital budget, that gave them the right to then move funds from operating to capital, and that's a fairly standard thing within the sector.
Was a municipal resolution from council or any direction from council authorizing the transfer of reserve funds to pay for any operating or capital expenditure approved in the municipal?
I think I'll use my last response to answer that one as well. And it was more of a in its entirety. There, you know, very few municipalities would need to bring forward to council every transfer of operating dollars into capital. It's typically en masse when the capital project is approved. If there are instances where a project is now going to be, say, $2 million over budget and more funding needs to be approved for it, that would typically come back to a council.
Were there any management letters completed by the current town auditor to council or a management committee of council that identified any management problems or comments made on the state of our reserve funds? Did you happen to see them or you didn't know that? Or either?
Yeah, no, we, given a lot of the audits were done in catch-up mode in the last year, there was a letter from the auditor in 2013. It did note that one of the reserves was in a credit balance. And that needed to be addressed by management. We've confirmed with management actually just this afternoon that they have indeed addressed that particular point.
There's one here, you don't have to identify anybody or anything like that, but is there a specific individual or individuals in charge of these funds and the way they were used?
I think our review would suggest that because there was limited information available and even some of our earlier comments on the nature in which the budgeting process was run, that it was rather tightly controlled. And in this case, a lot of it was performed by the treasurer. We do believe from what we've seen going forward that that'll be more of a shared responsibility within this finance team.
One more is dealing with basically the handling of cash. There were three areas that were mentioned. Generally, it was described as possible fraud or theft could occur with no policies in place. Was there anything done to examine a little closer of any possible mishandling?
We did not identify a situation where we thought fraud may have taken place. I think what we were identifying is that in the absence of specific controls, your fraud risk in general does increase. So on the topic of cash handling specifically, there is not a defined policy and strong segregation of duties around cash handling. And as a result, our recommendation to management is that they take a look at that and they build some controls in.
Thank you.
Mayor Hurst, may I?
Yes, Councilor Puget.
Thank you, Mayor Hurst. That's for you to Jamie. Jamie, you received my question about yesterday.
We did, thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to start at the beginning and I'll skip the other questions that the other councilors asked. And I just want to go back to how this started. And in your opinion, who was responsible to report to council the terms and conditions of the RFP and the SLA? And why wasn't council informed of the terms and conditions of the RFP and the SLA until September 4th, 2014?
Yeah, I'm going to have to defer this to the ministry. In our view, that was all managed by the ministry with this council in terms of what this project was going to be about. We simply replied to the RFP, which was a public document, and outlined the scope of the review, and then that became our contract with the ministry through to the town.
Thank you. So that I don't know if you can answer this question then, that in your opinion, did your company, Deloitte, follow all the terms and conditions set forth through the RFP and SLA?
Obviously, this is our opinion on our own work, so I'll share it. But we obviously have our own quality assurance processes within Deloitte, so this work was reviewed by a partner that was not involved in the day-to-day and who really looks at our final report against the scope of the contract, and there was comfort there. It was also reviewed by two different levels within the ministry from which we received review comments and editorial comments back and adjusted where we felt was required from there. So yes, we feel like we've lived up to our obligation. And I'll also, I know at the end of the last meeting I said we were under budget, but we came in around $72,000-$73,000. There's still budget room there for either follow-on observation to make sure management is living up to getting these recommendations implemented and or anything else that council wants to direct us toward.
Thank you, Jamie. And through your investigation, what did you determine the net financial debt for the town of Amherstburg is as of your final report on July 15, 2014, including but not limited to our municipal debt, the employee benefits payable, the deferred revenue, interest on debt, bank loans, debentures, etc.?
Yeah, so I'm going to have to answer that by saying we didn't see that as part of our scope to comment on the debt. We looked to the audited financial statements and the auditor's review of the financial statements when it comes to debt load. We looked more at processes around debt management and unfunded capital and things like that, the things that we commented on in the report.
Thank you. Who will determine if Amherstburg Council implements and follows your 41 recommendations in your review, and how will this be done?
From our perspective, Council ultimately was the client for this particular engagement, even though it was through the ministry. Our recommendation would be that Council should consider a motion to ask management to address these recommendations, and then obviously with the new council coming in, you'd want to validate whatever management plan is being put in place to address these recommendations.
Well, what, if any, are the consequences to our community if these recommendations are not implemented by this council or the new council?
I used the term financial risk earlier. I think we'll continue to operate in a higher degree of financial risk if we don't have the maturing of the finance function as it was outlined here. So what that means is, potentially not addressing debt loads, capital project requirements, capital asset requirements going forward, and continuing to operate with a higher degree of financial risk.
According to number one in the review, adequacy and controls to govern current operating expenses. This deals with the personnel issue. I'm just going to drop that one. According to number 1.3 of tax policies, did you review if council had allowed any major tax breaks to any developer without reporting out for these alleged tax breaks? Did you investigate anything of that sort?
Yeah, we did not. And just in the scope as it was laid out, didn't see that as a specific item for us to look into.
Did Amherstburg miss out on any tax sales, or did you investigate that area? No.
So we did some limited testing in that area and didn't find any particular issues. And the biggest item being the gas tax funds, I think we commented on that clearly in the report.
According to number 4 of your report concerning communication with council on financial matters, in particular capital projects, did your firm ensure that all monies designated by the government, in particular the bail funds, were spent accordingly?
So again, I'm going to suggest that wasn't part of the scope of the review and in our minds to review all of those detailed transactions, but we did indeed review the audit of the gas tax funding by the AMO just to make sure that was clearly reviewed and that it passed the audit.
I'm not going to ask about the quarterly reports. I'm going to skip 4.1. It's personnel. Regarding the accounting of the Baden software, page 6, can you identify the one individual on staff who has been identified as a system expert?
Yeah, so that individual is actually no longer here at the town. They've left, and management is putting a plan in place in terms of backfilling for that expertise.
So at this time, we don't have a systems expert?
I would suggest you've got some power users, as we would call them, folks that have been working with the tool now for a number of years and certainly know how it works here at the town. Where the gap is somebody that knows what else it can do beyond the way that we've been using it, and that's where we've encouraged management to get in touch with the vendor and have them come in and assist.
Thank you. Regarding the Finance and Audit Committee, page 15, Deloitte's recommendation, a Finance Audit Committee, which could include non-council members with expertise, and I understand that was touched on, but my question is, would the CAO and Finance welcome their assistance and oversight?
So I'm not going to answer that question. I think that's addressed to others.
Okay.
Absolutely, on behalf of the CAO, on behalf of Finance.
Okay, the next one I'm going to skip. The question was, did your firm dig deep enough to tell us how much the debt really is, but that wasn't part of your
No, again, it wasn't explicit in the service level agreement. I thought I'd be doing all the coughing by now, Councilor Sutton, but the laws just seems to be working. It was not one of the bullet items in the scope for us to specifically audit that area and come up with an answer on what the actual debt is. I believe management is working to make that clear to council and to the constituents.
Most of my other questions have been answered. I do have one. Page 17. This is disturbing. It's a red flag. Not able to locate bank statements to validate deposit of $166,000. And there's nothing more said about that. How did you gain comfort the money was ever deposited? And what procedures were performed? And how did you end at this point without making a statement and how this was resolved?
Sure, so there's always two sides to a transaction. One is the paperwork and the ledgers here at the town for that deposit. The other side being the bank statement deposit. We were comfortable with the record keeping that we saw here on this side of the town. The challenge was going back 10 years with the bank to have them reproduce that statement. They had, you know, not only a challenge in terms of their own record keeping, but also a cost that would have been associated with that. We felt comfortable from the record keeping here that those monies are still here and available for use. We didn't see anything that would have indicated otherwise, so we stopped at that point in time.
Thank you, Jamie, and thank you, Mayor Hirst. I do have a couple more questions, but it wouldn't be fair to Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. One of the benefits of going last is you can cut back on your questions because most of mine have been answered. But I do have a couple of comments, and then I have one at the end. I'd like to ask one question, if I may. I, like Councilor Pilon, didn't send you anything in advance because I feel it would be best answered verbally. So I'm heartened with the fact that the statement you just made that council should introduce a motion to direct administration to report as we comply with the recommendations. That was one of my questions. Like, what would be your suggestion to how we monitor this? Like, is it our responsibility, the administration, is that the shelter? Because we do have to comply, no doubt. So you've answered that one. I was very interested in your position on the providing more details and transparency on the reserve accounting, because that's been a big contested thing in the community and on council as to what actually happened to the reserves, where did they go, et cetera, and who's responsible, all of that stuff. But that would get into personnel, and I won't go there. So the last part, as I say, the rest of my concerns have been addressed in fashion. But the last thing is under agreements, policies, and procedures and bylaws, in the first paragraph, where you state that the town does not have an agreement, policy, or procedure currently in place with respect to the use of accounting bequests or donations. And that ran a flag with me right there. And it says here, a memo had been prepared, and I'm just going to read it. A memo had been prepared in 2009 outlining the eligible expenses posted to the Ranta Park Reserve, which totaled $73,454.08. The difference of $133,400.93 remaining in the reserve was transferred from the reporting operating account into a separate bank account in May 2004. My comment and then the question. I inquired about this some time ago because I was very involved in the Ranta Marina, having leased the marina on behalf of the association for 4 years before it was sold. And I know that Lisa Ranta Chappas had donated a sizable amount of money for the park. And I knew that there was some money left over, and I inquired as to how much was there and what could we do to enhance that park, because it's not used to its fullest extent before somebody says, well, we should sell it. So anyway, the difference of $133,400.93 was informed that that's where it was left. And I said, okay, let's have a meeting and we'll put it to a vote or a motion to spend the money that's there. Oh, just a moment, you can't do that because the money isn't there. And yet it says here it was transferred from an operating account into a separate bank account. Is the money there or is the money not there? I don't know.
So
I don't know if that's a question for you or
Because I've asked everybody and I can't get an answer.
I'll give my best attempt, and then if management wants to add in, we'll open up the floor. I think when somebody says the money isn't there, they might have been saying, we don't have a designated account with the dollars sitting over there because they were still lumped in with the operating funding. So it's not that it didn't exist, it's that it wasn't properly segregated in its own account like it should have been from the start.
Excuse me for just a moment, I can stop you right there. The information I received, and that was from an employee that's no longer here, that money was spent. I can't prove that because I wasn't privy to that, but that was a senior person of this administration who has left and said the money was just spent. Nobody knows where. What do I do with that? And there was no fraud found. I don't know, maybe this isn't the venue for asking that question, but.
Excuse me, let Wendy respond.
I believe I can speak to that. The money, when it was originally deposited, was put in the general operating account. And that individual telling you it was spent was probably due to the fact that it wasn't segregated on the books or in a bank account. And our operating line goes up and down in the black and red, depending on the month, depending on our cash flow. So in a sense, that cash not being segregated was gone, but we have rectified that since then and taken cash from our operating line and put it in its own account where it gains interest and is waiting for proper usage. So when it's in a general account originally, it's just blended in with all the other things that were blended in at a time. I mean, gas tax went there at one time until just this year. We're slowly beginning to segregate all those funds appropriately.
Okay,
so
just
hopefully that helps.
Okay, as a follow-up comment that I want to make, abundantly clear to everyone here, especially for the public, the money is there, and when we come up with the right project for the Ranta Park, we have the money to do it, correct?
Absolutely. We have a bank account called Ranta Marina, and it has those dollars
Ranta
in it,
Park.
And it's gaining interest at this time.
Mm-hmm. Just correctly, it was changed to Ranta Park because the marina was severed
or
from the park.
Or Ranta something.
Yes,
it's properly labeled and segregated, and our hands aren't in it.
The town doesn't own the marina anymore.
But excuse me, let's just understand one thing. When the money was donated or given to the town, it was specified, it wasn't for no marina, it was for Ranta Park. So let's be very clear about that.
Yep, and that's what I'm trying to ascertain. So, okay, the money's there, that's great. I'll work on that personally in the future. That's all I have. Thank you, Jamie.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just to clarify for council, there's been a couple of questions in regards to the motion in regards to implementing the 41 recommendations. August the 8th, at our council meeting when Jamie Lanoue was here with ministry, council passed a resolution that states the presentation be received and that council and administration continue to work with the representatives up from Deloitte LPP in implementing the 41 recommendations of the financial services review. And it was carried unanimously.
Councillor Davies?
Just like to complete my few questions,
sure,
because a number
ahead.
Of them have already been answered, including the Ranta Marina question. Thank you very much. The issue of bylaws, and I don't know how much you got into that, but the issue of bylaws, and I think that was number 5.2. The question is, do staff receive formal certified education on writing the bylaws, and what is the procedure, and how do we gain more skills if we don't have that training already? I know a number of folks do have some skill sets, but is it a formalized thing within municipalities, or is it kind of whoever can do it best?
Yeah, typically there's a few different people that have that skill set and background. We did not specifically look at how much of that skill set resides here within the town today, but would definitely recommend that it's something that gets looked at and look to use external assistance only where required. If there's new bylaws being drafted that you don't have today and it's in an operational area where we don't have experience with that bylaw, as an example.
Just to add to that, if I could, Council, that old saying about copying or borrowing is the sincerest form of flattery. That's what municipalities do. You beg or you borrow from each other. You look at bylaws. If council said, can we get a bylaw on this? I think one of the recent stories was smoke, nuisance, and some others. So you try to find them from other municipalities, you look at them. If there's any doubt in our mind at all with respect to the bylaw, you try to take the best of them. Then we run them by the town solicitor for advice on, is there anything missing from this?
Thank you very much. And 5.4, the issue of collective agreements for processes and procedures. Should a financial manager for highest returns of managing the funds be made available versus just sitting there? And can reports on separate accounts be reported?
Yeah, so just a bit more context on this one before I answer. This is in relation to the collective agreement in and around the post-retirement benefits. In this situation, the collective agreement actually states that every one of those funds need to be managed externally individually. That's fairly cost prohibitive given the dollar size of these particular reserves. I know management is looking at this and looking to see if they can pool it together and have one fund manager instead, because that would be more economically feasible for everybody involved. But definitely in these situations, especially where a collective agreement says thou shalt, you have to. And in this case, it is something that needs to get set up.
Thank you. And benchmarks 6.31, benchmarks compared against other successful organizations, to which I think after our 41 recommendations, we may be the benchmark. So that's just to say that I do have confidence in the 41 recommendations. The question is, we usually measure against local communities. Should we not measure against communities that have reached goals we wish to obtain versus best practices? Because in your report, you mentioned that you look around and see what other people are doing, you know, within Essex County or Southwestern Ontario. But is there a better way of doing it than just locally?
It's a great question. And benchmarking is often a very tough topic because you can always find the benchmark you want to use versus maybe the one that you should use. We had a lot of good dialogue with management on just the overall performance management here at the town. I think it's going to be important to come up with a performance management framework and determining who we want to benchmark ourselves against for every one of those indicators up front, and then live with the results and live with where we want to get to on those different indicators. But I would definitely encourage you to look at communities that are both in this geographic area, across Canada, other countries around the world. There's obviously lessons that can be learned and things that you can aspire to from other geographies.
And is AMO one of those jurisdictions that are useful to use?
Yeah, so AMO and OMBI, there are a number of different indicator benchmarks that are out there that can be leveraged. And then I also encourage, to the point earlier about begging and borrowing from other municipalities, is once you've got your indicators set, is you can talk directly to the four or five municipalities that you want to benchmark with and try to build a bit more of a consortium with them around how you're going to provide that benchmark data and making sure that the benchmark data is truly apples to apples.
And my last question is 6.41, issuing implementing auditor's reports. And this should be mandatory, like a workplace evaluation. Is this part of the process and procedures, the mandatory implementing the auditor's reports? In other words, when the auditor comes in, we're going to say, oh, here are the, because we haven't been doing that previously to this management, correct?
Correct. In most organizations that has an audit committee, part of the terms of reference of the audit committee is basically to make sure that those letter recommendation points are being addressed by management. And I would suggest that you'd want to do the same with the finance and audit committee if you set that up.
Thank you. That's all my questions.
Thank you. Any other questions of council? Councillor Pouget.
Thank you, Mayor Hirst. Through you to Jamie. I know that you did talk about the reserves. Can you give us exactly how much was there in the beginning, and then how much was it depleted? What was the final amount of the reserves after, when we said it was approximately $6 million? Do you have that information?
Again, we didn't look at balances of reserves. We looked at the processes around and the accounting around the reserves, so I can't comment on specific balances at any point in time during this time frame.
One last question.
Go ahead.
How did you determine councillors didn't ask the right questions? I mean, how did you determine that? Because, trust me, I asked every question possible, either verbally or sent emails or requests or motions, and I contacted everybody that could possibly help, including the Ministry of Municipal Affairs on several occasions. And, you know, so how did you determine that we didn't ask the right questions?
So I don't think we determined that you didn't ask the right questions. I think we had recommendations in there about being in a position to make sure you're asking the right questions. And I think to the dialogue I had with Councillor Pilon earlier, it's really about trying to understand from management what assumptions are built into the information that's coming forward and questioning those assumptions. I think one of the most difficult things in municipal government is understanding the difference between management's responsibility to operate the organization and council's responsibility to govern the organization. Those are two distinct things, and I think sometimes questions get asked that are way down here in the operational weeds of things around specific transactions, maybe without the broader context of why we're asking that question in terms of what risk does that provide, or are we trying to address, or trying to understand maybe the assumptions and variables around a given transaction or situation. So I think our observation in general was that the questions that are coming forward are usually far too operational. What we need are questions that are much more challenging, I'd say, at a governing level, in terms of the strategy, the long-term financial plan, and then those key variables and assumptions that go into all the financial modeling that's required for an organization of this nature.
Councillor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just through you and further to the point that's being made, I don't believe Deloitte ever accused council of not asking the right questions. I think that was a false conclusion reached by the Windsor Star. That being said, a lot of rumors, a lot of innuendo, a lot of allegations, you know, through the past year. And I know I asked you the night you presented, I'll ask you again, you know, for the benefit of those in attendance. Was there anything you found in your investigation of the town of Amherstburg's finances or dealings that would suggest that further investigation up to and including a forensic audit would be warranted?
Again, from our review, which was a review, not an audit, we didn't come across anything that made our tentacles go up in terms of requiring a more forensic review in any given area. And in fact, we feel, again, that some of the steps that have already been taken by management and the intent to implement all the recommendations should put you on the right path going forward.
And then just to follow up, because I know there's some in attendance who weren't here the other night, and the question of debt has been raised. Justin, you reported the other night, and correct me if I'm wrong, when all is said and done at the end of the year, we'll be at $46.6 million, which, depending on how, which lens you look at it, is in the 9 to 12% range of total assets. Is that correct?
That is correct. The only thing that could change that is depending on how far we get with Pump Station 2 before the year end. That's the only variable that hasn't been looked at, but it was also discussed in the presentation. So that's the only variable that that could change that number.
So the 61 million figure that's been floated around by some of the community is totally erroneous.
Well, the 61 million comes from including the unfunded employee benefits and the deferred revenue, which we discussed the other night. The unfunded employee benefits is about growth of the investment in the future to fund those benefits. And then the deferred revenue deals specifically with the development charges, which again is not a debt that the town has to pay back at any given point in time. I kept that report strictly to the loans of the town that dealt with capital and compared it to the capital.
So deferred revenue, long-term retirement benefit liability, and obviously interest that you paid for in the previous year cannot be calculated as debt.
Yeah, that's correct. That's the difference between the 61 and the report that I gave. So yeah, that's the difference between them.
Thank you.
Councillor Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, through you. And again, I like the last comment that you made. I do think is a critical one, and knowing what questions to ask and at what level you're asking them. And I certainly do understand the difference between governance and governing the business of the town and administering it. And our job is to govern it, not to micromanage it. So I really appreciate that statement, and I know we've all worked very hard at having questions answered, and sometimes have some folks have trouble letting go of trying to also micromanage it. I do think, though, that and it's true, AMO, they're talking about this all the time, that you're the governance model, you're not the administration. And I would suggest that we might want to strongly consider for the new council that be a course that council learns to do, is how can we support management through our governance questions so that they can get on doing the job that they need to do, and that we understand what it is they're doing for us. Thank you.
Councillor Pouget.
Thank you, Mayor Hirst. And just one last comment to Justin. Justin, regarding the $60.14 million, the public is not putting out misinformation regarding that, because that's the amount that the town has put out on our website. Is that not correct?
That is the amount on the financial statements of the town, but I just wanted to elaborate and educate people on to what future employee benefits really means to the town as far as cash and dollars and what it really is based on actuary reports. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody was aware of that, because it's something that is it's a high level accounting thing, and it's something that gets very much misconstrued in it. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody was on the same page with that, including council, because I know, you know, one of the things is, where does that fit into the picture? How does that fit in? What does that really mean? So that's why I wanted to address it in that fashion.
And I wanted to address it in this fashion also, that the public is being accused of giving others wrong information, inaccurate information. But that's not the case. They are getting this information regarding the $60.14 million directly from our website for the financial information that's provided.
Yes, it does come from the financial statements, but I just... One thing to come from the financial statements is another thing to understand them. So I'm trying to bridge that gap between looking at a number and coming up with a dead conclusion, and looking at a number and coming up with the right conclusion. So that's where that report was intended to go.
So. And the important factor is to understand it is not a debt.
It's a liability.
Exactly. If there's no other questions, I want to take this opportunity on behalf of council to thank both of you, Jamie and Anita, for your presentation. Thank council for their particular questions. And in the one of the issues that you touched is very important, is understanding the difference between management and governance. And that is so very important for council to realize that. The other aspect that you put forth, of course, is what you called the extended audit procedures. And council is aware now that those are the questions they can ask, and those are the directions they can give in the event they are really left with not understanding exactly what had been put before them, because it's trying to be able to confirm exactly that what they are being told is truth. And so that's what it is, and that certainly will go a long way in assisting this particular legislative body. So again, on behalf of council, I want to thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
I entertain a motion.
Move to adjourn.
Been moved, supported by Councillor Davey. All in favor? Motion is carried.
Mr. Mayor, I have a question.
If you don't have a question, I'm sorry.
Well, the meeting's over, Mr. Mayor. I have a question.
There's no question after the meeting.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question anyway.
Mike.
I have a question anyway, Mr. Mayor. Council members are our public good.
Excellent. Before I
want to
ask you a question.
That meeting has been delayed, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you so much.
I almost had my stethoscope around my neck and I threw the vaccine before I ran in here. Thank you so much, Paul, for the vaccine. I can't forget my life.
Yeah.